5th canto, 14th chapter, text number 44. Yo drishtyajan shitisutat svajanartha dharam. Yo drishtyajan shitisutat svajanartha dharam. Prayatyam sriyam. Sura vairam dusadhya vakalam. Naichan narpa tad uchitam mahatam mahasudavid. Naicham satva. Seva nurukta. Manasam abhayo api phalagu. Sukhdev Goswami continued, My dear King, the activities of Bharat Maharaj was wonderful. Sukhdev Goswami continued, My dear King, the activities of Bharat Maharaj are wonderful. He gave up everything difficult for others to give up. He gave up his kingdom, his wife, and his family. His opulence was so great that even the demigods envied it, yet he gave it all up. He was quite befitting a great personality like him to be a great devotee. It was quite befitting a great personality like him to be a great devotee. He could renounce everything because he was so attracted to the beauty, opulence, reputation, knowledge, strength, and renunciation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. Krishna is so attractive that one can give up all desirable things for his sake. Indeed, even liberation is considered insignificant for those whose minds are attracted to the loving service of the Lord. Purport by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. This verse confirms Krishna's all-attractiveness. Maharaj Bharat was so attracted to Krishna that he gave up all his material possessions. Generally, materialist people are attracted to such possessions. Ato graha kshetra sutapta viteir dhanasya moha aham ayam aham mamite. Bhagavatam 5.5.8. One becomes attracted to his body, home, property and children, relatives and wealth. In this way, one increases life's illusions and thinks in terms of I and mine. The attraction for material things is certainly due to illusion. There is no value in attraction to material things, for the conditioned soul is diverted by them. One's life is successful if he is absorbed in the attraction of Krishna's strength, beauty, pastimes as described in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. The Mayavadis are attracted to merging into the existence of the Lord, but Krishna is more attractive than the desire to merge. The word abhava means not to take birth again in this material world. A devotee doesn't care whether he is going to be reborn or not. He is simply satisfied with the Lord's service in any condition. That is real mukti. Ihayasya harer dasya karmana manasah gira nikhilva api avasthaso jivan mukta स उच्चते, जीवन मुक्त स उच्चते. वन हु एक्ट्स टू सर्व कृष्णा विथ हिज माइंड बॉडी इंटेलिजेंस एंड वर्ड्स इज अ लिबरेटेड पर्सन इवन इन दिस मटेरियल वर्ल्ड. भक्ति रसामृत सिंधु 1.2.187. आई विल जस्ट रिपीट. One who acts to serve Krishna with his body, mind, intelligence and words is a liberated person, even within this material world. A person who always desires to serve Krishna is interested in ways to convince people that there is a Supreme Personality of Godhead and that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Krishna. That is his ambition. It doesn't matter whether he is in heaven or in hell. This is called Uttama Shloka Lalasa. Om again. Shlok is from Srimad Bhagavatam. The title of this chapter is The Forest of Enjoyment. And this is the fifth canto. The creative impulse. The creative impetus, not impulse, impetus. Here, it is clearly stated that King Bharat, who is the eldest son of Rishabhdev, and very powerful incarnation of the Lord, he was taught extremely well by his father. His father gave those wonderful teachings to his 100 sons, which included, of course, King Bharat Maharaj after he abdicated. The now Yogendras, you can read about them in the 11th canto. And then the rest of his sons. Everyone he taught equally. And by his teachings, Bharat Maharaj was able to give up everything for the sake of pure devotional service. He had a wonderful wife and children. He had a kingdom which was the envy of the demigods. He had great opulence, reputation. He had wonderful knowledge, strength, everything. But he saw in Krishna the unlimited strength, unlimited beauty, unlimited renunciation, knowledge, beauty and opulence. And therefore, he realized that his own strength, beauty, wealth, etc. was nothing compared to that of Krishna. It is at that stage that realization comes. Self-realization means when you realize that whatever you have, all of us have something. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. We have some knowledge, therefore we've come here. We have some money, wealth, therefore we were able to come here. We have some beauty or some renunciation. We have some opulence of some nature, and maybe we have some reputation. But when we realize that our reputation, our knowledge, our wealth and strength, etc., is minuscule. It is atomic, anu. And Krishna is vibhu. Therefore, anything associated with Krishna is vibhu, unlimited. And then that is called the first stage of self-realization. You realize by yourself. Somebody tells you, that doesn't mean self-realization. That is an instruction. Somebody has told you. But you may accept or not accept. Supposing you are on the 10th floor and somebody says, now jump out of the window. That's an instruction. But the self-realization is, if I jump out, I am going to commit suicide, I'll die, I'll have to have 7 more lives of suicide. That is what the Shastra says, and therefore it's not worth the carrying out that instruction, whatever it may be. So that self-realization means when you compare with the Shastras. If you do not compare your thoughts or your notes or whatever you have, or knowledge, you have to compare with what is there in Vedic Sanatan Dharma. That is the first process of self-realization. By the time we finish at 9 o'clock, we'll go through all the processes of self-realization up to the final stage of going home back to Godhead. Okay? That's the deal. So, in 20 minutes, I have to finish this job. First step out of the 7 steps, the first step is the first step of self-realization. Fortunately, you have already become self-realized souls. That's the best part of it. You've come here, you are regularly coming here, regularly attending various programs here. Therefore, you are getting realized. You are realizing something. And that realization, according to Srimad Bhagavatam and in the case of Bharat Maharaj, was so good that he was prepared to give up other things. His kingdom. Today, who would give up so much wealth? Who would give up so much power and fame, renunciation, everything he renounced? Very few politicians would do that. We don't have kings of that nature now. But nobody would give up. But he gave up. Why? Because he got a higher taste. He got a knowledge. He got a taste, a rasa. So, Prabhupada says, and now I'm going to come to this wonderful book which I'm reading regularly now. It's called Dasha Mula Tattva by Bhakti Vinod Thakur, who is one of the greatest acharyas we've ever had, the final authority in Krishna consciousness, who was the reviver, who brought about the Renaissance, who established without any doubt that there is no difference between Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Krishna. So Bhakti Vinod Thakur is a final authority of that age and time and place and circumstance who did this. Now he himself has written this book which clearly gives step by step in 11 chapters. This book has got 11 chapters. And in these 11 chapters, he takes you home back to Godhead. My job today is to summarize this book in light of this wonderful shloka of Bhagavatam. Now, we have to learn from Srimad Bhagavatam two things. One is the correct direction we have to take. And secondly, the wrong things that have happened in the past so that we don't fall in the same trap. You see? That is intelligence. What is intelligence? Intelligence is composed of two parts. The first part of the intelligence of human beings is, compared to all animals and other things, and animals, insects, fish, all plants, whatever. The Jivatma is intelligent in two respects. It is stated by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. It's called Vivek. Vivek means to discriminate. This is what I should do, this is what I shouldn't do. So, the first and foremost thing which we have to do is we have to understand the Shastras. This is where Bharat lost out. This is where Bharat Maharaj lost out. He did not have satsang. He forgot certain things. Why? Because he got attracted to a small baby deer. And because he had basically got some of the learnings from his father, he had already got certain very wonderful feelings of compassion and mercy. But he was giving it in the wrong direction to this baby deer. And therefore he got attached to the baby deer. And later, as you all remember, he himself became a deer in his next life. Because his consciousness at the time of his death was that of that baby deer. And that is inevitable. You see, as you sow, so shall you reap. Whether you are sowing rice or you are sowing thoughts. If you sow rice seeds, you'll get rice. If you sow in your mind certain seeds of certain thoughts, you'll get that fruit or that result. So you reap Sow, you sow means whatever you plant, you are going to get that result. And the mind is a very fertile place for sowing millions of seeds. We know that. Constantly, even if you are sleeping, the mind will keep on giving thoughts. And therefore, thoughts will keep on coming. And that's what happened to poor Bharat Maharaj. Poor because he had lost everything, he gave up everything, he didn't have anything. And after having given up everything, not having anything, instead of strictly cultivating Krishna consciousness, I was hearing this morning only, Prabhupada was saying that Krishna consciousness means remembering Krishna at the end of your life. He defines what is Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness means remembering Krishna at the end of your life. Krishna consciousness has no other meaning. Krishna consciousness does not mean anything concocted. Our authority has made it very clear. Whatever you remember at the last moment of your life, if you remember Krishna, then you are Krishna conscious. If you don't remember Krishna, then you are whatever, like this deer conscious. So, having established the fundamentals of self-realization, having established the next most important thing, that why we have to be Krishna conscious, because we are sowing the seeds of Krishna consciousness into our mind. And therefore, at the end of our life, we will get the fruits of going home back to Godhead, remembering Krishna, serving Krishna, etc. So now, shall we start with your permission? This wonderful book I am reading. So I thought I'll share with you and then we will proceed further. In summary, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the Vedas are the principal scripture evidence. The Vedas are the principal scriptural evidence, which in turn, because you know he was a deputy magistrate. So magistrate always goes by evidence, because he is like a law-abiding magistrate. Makes everybody say, show me evidence, otherwise forget about it. So in the court you have to show evidence. So his language is that of a lawyer. The Vedas are the principal scriptural evidence, which in turn expounds the following 9 principles. So the Vedas, sarvasya chaham radhisanni vishtu, sruti jnana ponancha, vedesya sar ved, aham eva vedo, vedanta krut ved. Krishna says, I am Veda Anta. I am the end of Vedas. Veda Anta. Anta. So I am to be realized by the principles of Veda. Krishna is the supreme absolute truth. That is the most important thing. Krishna is the supreme absolute truth. We are going to come to the most important subject. What is absolute truth? And why this is so important? Krishna is omnipotent. Krishna is the fountainhead of all relationships and love. We'll come into details of that. The living entities are his separated parts and parcels. The living entities, due to their conditional situation as a marginal energy, may come under the sway of material energy. Means, just like we had that tsunami and then there were some other things happening in America, Katrina and all that. The waves are so strong from the ocean or from the rain or whatever, from the river, that it sways. I have seen big cars, big buses. Even in Bombay recently I saw that. A huge bus with all children in it, means there was some weight also inside and others, was swayed away, carried away by water. Now, what is that water? Little droplets of rain. Now, none of the droplet of rain thought that he can be a cause of moving a bus. When the rain is falling, supposing each drop of rain had some brain in it, assuming. None of those drops were thinking that I can move a whole bus. But collectively, due to satsang, what happened? The whole bus could be moved. So you now realize the importance of satsang. So therefore, the thing that Bharat Maharaj missed out is the satsang. And unless there is satsang, there is no way one can get things moving. You will go in the reverse direction. Because the force of material energy is so strong that we have no position to stop it. We cannot stop. We don't have the ability of force. But satsang has the ability to stop material sway. And what happens? Again, due to the marginal nature, the living entities in the liberated condition are free of the influence of material nature. We've already covered that. How you are free. What gives you mukti? Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna himself has said that you get freedom from what? Liberation from what? Mukti from what? Mukti from being bound by the material energy in this material world. So that you are liberated and you are free. Now if you are free, then you don't want to get back into the same situation. Supposing after doing 30 years or 100 years of jail sentence or 80 years of jail sentence, this body is like a jail. The jivatma is stuck inside, bound up inside a jail. Now having once come out of the jail, when you are dead, you don't want to get back into another jail. Surely. It would be stupid to do that. You see, no jailbird wants to go running back into a jail. You want to enjoy. You want to have bliss. That is the very nature of the soul. But it's seeking that bliss in the wrong place. Instead of going back home, back to Godhead, to your own constitutional house, you're going to the unconstitutional house, that of Durga. Durga means jail. The word Durga means prison actually, fortress. It is so strong. Durga, word, Sanskrit word Durga. Dur and Ga means a fortress, which is a prison. And she, the personified Durga, is the controller of that jail. With three-pronged attack, uska hath mein, some sort of a spear with three heads. Adi Devik, Adi Bhautik, Adhyatmik, Trivida Tapa, Upashamana. The living entities and everything in the material cosmos are simultaneously one and different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We cannot be God. No way. It's impossible. Mayavadis may tell each other Narayan, but that will come to Narayan in a few minutes. He is a totally different entity. We are a totally different entity. We cannot be the same. Pure devotional service. Now, this first eight are actually called sambandhas. It is specified by Bhaktivinoda Thakur that sambandh is composed of eight elements, which I have just delineated. The next one, ninth, the pure devotional service is the living entity's occupation and means. So, supposing somebody has to write in a form, government form or whatever form, what is your occupation? So, somebody will say, I'm a businessman, somebody will say, I'm a teacher. Somebody will say, I'm employed in some company. But that is not your real occupation. That is only a temporary thing of the body. But the soul is concerned. Soul has an occupation according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The soul's occupation is pure devotional service. That is the occupation of the soul. And not only it is the occupation, it is a means also. Just like money is sometimes for a rich man the means to become more rich, because money begets money in the form of interest or whatever you may call it. At the same time, for him, that is his goal, that is his Bhagavan. And to justify it, he will bring out a dollar note. See, it's written here. We trust in God. God in trust. Isn't it something written in the dollar note? In God we trust. But that unfortunately is only to the extent of the dollar. That's what the Americans trust. So, that is their means and that is their goal. It's written there in the dollar note. You just read it. You see. That's why they believe in America. Paisa Mera Bhagavan. And then 10. Pure love of Krishna. And so this number 9 is what is it called? It is called Abhidaya. This principle is defined by Bhaktivinoda Thakur as Abhidaya. Abhidaya is pure devotional service. Is the living entity's occupation and means. And the 10th. Pure love of Krishna is the living entity's ultimate goal. And that is called Prayojana. Prayojana means We have to have a goal in life. Temporary goals are always there. Today your goal is to have your lunch after this. Then you have a goal to finish some work which you have got. Some people say, oh, once I get my daughter married, that is my goal of life. Then a harsh finish. Mera kaam ho gaya. You know? But that is not the ultimate goal. That is a temporary goal. The ultimate goal is for the ultimate. The soul has an ultimate goal. There is no other goal after that goal. See? And that goal is pure love of Krishna is the living entity's ultimate goal. And that is called Prayojana principle. So these three things are important. Sambandha, Abhidaya and Prayojana. Sambandha is in eight parts. The Abhidaya is in one principle and Prayojana is another principle. This is the most important thing which you can study in Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given wonderfully. And detailed description is in this book. We now come to the most important subject, our ultimate goal. What is our ultimate goal? Developing, loving, pure loving relationship with Krishna. Love of Krishna. So, to do that, we must know about Krishna. So, he explains, Krishna is the ocean of devotional rasa. Krishna has two aspects. One is already we mentioned 64 qualities you everybody knows who have read Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. That Krishna is this, Krishna is that, Krishna is like this. He, of course, the last four he retains for himself. Up to that stage you can have Narayan. But when it comes to the extreme superior beauty, that is only with Krishna. Relationships of a very loving nature with cowherd boys and cowherd girls, that is also only with Krishna, right? So these are two out of the four. Now let's see, which are the other two? One is flute. Krishna is all attractive flute. Krishna is himself all attractive. But his flute is so all attractive that by listening to the flute, everybody is attracted to Krishna. And pastimes. Krishna's particularly childhood pastimes like these, Damodar Leela, are so unique that you won't find that in Narayan or in Shiva or Brahma, etc. So these four, which he retains for himself. But this is what we read in the Shastra. But what we experience ourselves is devotional ras. See, there are two things. One is what you read. You go to a cinema hall, you see the cinema. Isn't it? But you don't have that experience. Supposing there may be, for a man, there may be a beautiful woman in that movie. Or for a woman, there may be a beautiful man in that movie. Handsome fellow. But that's it. He is there, we are here. Nothing, no relationship. But where is the question of getting that taste? Ras means taste. So you get a taste of associating with Krishna. And here it comes. These are wonderful truths. Very, very high level of philosophy. The absolute truth, the embodiment of non-dual knowledge. Absolute truth is the embodiment, like a body, embodiment of non-dual knowledge. Just please repeat. The absolute truth, the embodiment of non-dual knowledge is ras, spiritual relish. This is a definition. Very often we have heard the verse, we have heard the word ras, we have heard the words absolute truth, but rarely has anybody defined what is actually meant by absolute truth. Bhakti Vinod Thakur has defined the absolute truth is an embodiment. Absolute truth, not a vague idea. It is not something unknown. What did that Dr. Radhakrishna say? the black unknown within Krishna. There is no black unknown within Krishna. He is same within and without. So, the absolute truth is an embodiment. Therefore, that's very important. Because people think that absolute truth is not embodiment. Absolute truth is something else. No. Absolute truth is an embodiment. Absolute truth is embodiment of non-dual. Krishna is not like us. We are dual. How are we dual? Our jivatma is different and our body is different. The body is going to remain here in this world. It will be burnt if we are going to the samshan. It may be buried or whatever. Even if we die in sea, they will just throw the body in the ocean for the fish to eat. So, the body will be gone, finished in a few years. Jivatma is never finished. In the case of Krishna, his body as well as jivatma is the same. It never gets finished. His body never gets finished. That's the beauty of it. Non-dual. And that non-dual is knowledge. That's why we are studying all this. Because otherwise, why bother studying anything? See, the reason why we take so much pain to study is because by that means of study, knowledge, we can understand this absolute truth, embodiment, which is himself Ras. Example is sugar cane. The beautiful example given by Bhaktivinoda Thakur is sugar cane. Now, you have all seen sugar cane, right? But many of you have not seen the sugar cane seed. Am I correct? Okay. Now what happens is that this sugar cane chota wala seed is planted and then the whole big sugar cane comes within a few months. Correct? So the moment you see that sugar cane, that green nice sugar cane, automatically your mind is clear that that is going to taste like this. Supposing you have never tasted sugar in your life, supposing you have never seen sugar cane in your life, you wouldn't know. It looks like a danda only. So how can a danda taste? I don't want to have anything to do with danda. There is a Mayavad philosophy. Okay. The Mayavads don't get the ras because they don't associate directly with that sugar cane. They think all dandas are same. Whether it is bamboo, why should I eat bamboo? Why should I eat this stick, that stick? Sugar cane stick. Same ona mangta hai na. It must be the same. They don't have the knowledge. So, Mayavadis are stupid. According to me, they are stupid. They don't have knowledge. They don't have that knowledge that there is discrimination, there is difference between this and that. And therefore, they paint everything same color. So, that is not very intelligent. The intelligence is to know the absolute truth because the absolute truth has ras. And the best example given in this book also is that of sugar cane. Because it looks like any other danda, but it is not like that. The more you squeeze that sugar cane in a machine, the more juice you will get out of it. Isn't it? You see these people on the street, they will first put it this way, then turn it around and put two of them, then turn it around, four of that. Same thing, but they turn it around. They try to extract the maximum juice out of it. So, what we have to do is, we have to keep on chanting the holy name of the Lord to get the maximum ras. You keep on chanting, chanting, chanting. What are you doing? You're repeating. What are you doing in chanting? One round is gone, second round, 16 round, 17, 18, whatever round. Again, round, round, round. Again, round, round, round. You are getting not only juice, but that juice has become thicker, thicker, more tasty, ras. The same thing you are doing when you are chanting. You keep on chanting. That's why we are not stupid to keep on chanting like mechanical toys. Every day, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Some people think, why are you chanting like this? What is all this? Simply doing this nonsense. No. What we are doing is, we are extracting ras. Remember this. By chanting, you get the absolute truth, ras. Okay. Then, the next thing is, he mentioned that once you get taste in sugar cane, you develop what is called faith. That all sugar cane will have same taste. I have now tasted first time what is sweetness. I never tasted such nice sweetness. So you get the faith that whenever you see a sugar cane, or a sugarcane field, you realize that this will be the thing. The sweetness will be there. So you develop a shraddha taste, a sort of faith. Similarly, if you see Kerala and eat it once, you'll get the faith also. That is going to taste bitter only. Kerala will not taste like sugar. Sugar will not taste like Kerala. Unless you are a Mayavadi. Then you get nishtha, steadiness. You get this steadiness that you get fixed in your mind that now I know this is the truth. You have not known the absolute truth, but you start getting to know a little bit about the truth. Okay. This leads to ruchi. We have already covered taste. Then asakti, then the beautiful thing happens. You start getting attachment, just like children get attachment to sweets. So they love sweets, isn't it? So they get attached to the sweets or chocolates or whatever it may be, or cakes or whatever. So this attachment to that ras is the first step of reaching shantaras. Because then you get that taste, ras of shantaras. You have so far not developed dasya ras, but you have reached at least shantaras. Up to at that stage of attachment with this. So, it is then called sthai bhav. Because shantaras means you become sthai. And in bhakti ras, this sthai ras is the basis of ecstatic manifestations. You will start feeling ecstatic manifestations. Like when you see Krishna, you will feel happy. You may get tears in your eyes. You may jump with joy. Things like that. So those things will happen naturally. As you progress further, this beautiful book. Everyone I would recommend to kindly get hold of this book and read. Because this gives in very short summary of not more than 150 pages, all the knowledge which you would normally get in hundreds and thousands of pages in several other books. After this, he explains the ingredients of ecstasy. Because now, next step is Dasyaras, isn't it? In Dasyaras, you start experiencing ecstasy. Because you are now dealing with that person. You knew that absolute truth is an embodiment. But you have not met that embodiment yet. You are like in a mirror. You are only seeing your image. But you are not associating with that person. Because that person is yourself only. In the image only. Where is the second fellow? He's not there. You are only there. But the moment a second person comes, another person is there, he may behave differently, I may behave differently. In a mirror, whatever I do, that is going to be reflected. So there is no fun in just being with a mirror all your life. The more enjoyable thing is when you are with somebody else. Then you get different experience, isn't it? You never know what new thing he will do. And you are doing your own thing, he is doing his own thing. But if both of them are doing the same devotional service to Krishna, then associating becomes satsang. That commonality has to be there. And that is the first ingredient of ecstasy. That is the, according to this wonderful book, ras is created when rati has matured and produced thai bhav. So, just like you get curd, dahi, from milk, you can't get dahi from anything else. You can't get dahi from water or from lemon juice. You'll get dahi only from milk. Similarly, when rati is matured, we already covered the word rati, then you get this bhav, consciousness of Krishna. That starts. Now we are on the basic fundamental platform of Krishna consciousness. And this bhav is composed of four parts. Remember, bhav is Krishna consciousness, bhav is composed of four parts. Which are the four parts? Vibhav, Anubhav, Sattvika Bhav, and Vyabhichari Bhav. These four parts. If you understand these four parts, you are gone home back to Godhead. That's it. You have passed the exam, final exam of life. Of human life, ka jo success hai, comes when you understand these four parts of the bhav. Not only you understand, but you practice. And not only you practice, you experience. And not only you experience, you benefit. And not only you benefit, but you love it. And when you love it, automatically your love of Krishna develops. You see? This is a step-by-step manual. We are engineers. So when we are in a factory, we have machinery. So when a new machine comes, we say, don't open the machine. Do you know that? We never touch the machine. We only touch the manual. We say, manual pehle batao. First we open the manual, we read everything, because we may cut off our finger or something, you know, by touching the wrong button or doing the wrong thing in a machine. So first thing is to read knowledge and then put your finger into something. Isn't it? Just like milk. So we don't know it's very hot or cold. You just don't put a finger in the milk. You quietly touch slightly the container and find out whether it's too hot or not. Similarly, this is the temperature measurement. This book is a temperature measurement, thermometer, to see how much heat you have got, what you have got in you, at what stage have you reached. Have you reached a certain level? This will tell you. So you please get hold of this, beg, borrow or steal this book or buy it, but get it. This is my strong suggestion to everyone who really is serious in going home back to Godhead. Otherwise you shouldn't be a human being. You might as well go back to become a donkey or a monkey or whatever you want to become. It's easy. That is very easy to become. This is a little more difficult. And this is the place which will teach you, because we've got devotees here, we've got a whole academy here downstairs which teaches this sort of science. So, unfortunately, I'm running out of time. There are 5 principal rasas and 7 subsidiary rasas. All of you know this. And I want to tell you the most important thing is that this Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan, these 3 features of the Lord are mentioned Srimad Bhagavatam, correct? Now, it is Krishna who gives us the mercy. It is Lord Krishna who gives us the mercy of showing His Bhagavan form. We cannot demand and get Bhagavan form to see. This Bhagavan business is not like any buying a ticket into a cinema hall. You cannot just say, Krishna, now I want to see you. It's not possible. It's not possible. At the most, you can see up to a level of Brahman and experience up to Paramatma level. So all these great yogis and all these intelligent people, jnanis and all, reach up to that level. But it is His mercy when He wants to reveal Himself that we can reach up to the level of Bhagavan. And it is very clearly stated here, a beautiful thing. Shantaras manifested toward Brahman and Paramatma feature is sparse. Sparse means like a desert, semi-desert. Usme bahut ras nahi hai. Thoda thoda hai ghas. I recently went to Africa. I saw how you can go from a place of no grass, little more grass to very heavy grass. So sparse means when there is very little taste. Kuch nahi hai. So there is shantaras. Some taste is there, but not that much. That is what he has written here. Shantaras manifested toward the Brahman and Paramatma features is sparse. The only relationship the worshipper is able to establish with the Supreme Lord when he manifests his form of opulence, Aishwarya, is Dasyaras. So when the Lord himself manifests himself in his opulent form, then you get Dasyaras. Means Narayan Swarup. But when the jiva, however, after long control of his indriyas, gets a higher taste, thus the Supreme Lord, out of his causeless mercy towards the jiva, manifests his beautiful form of Krishna to enable the jiva to relate with him in the Madhurya Prakash. So these different stages of Madhurya Prakash, full Madhurya Ras is the highest. But even when you are at Dasya Ras, you are serving somebody, no? You can't serve some light. I've never seen anybody serving a light. People are saying Niranjan, Nirakar, this thing, Palana, Dikra. This is of no meaning, you see. Because it's very sparse. We cannot fix our attention on that. Maybe a moth can, but we are not a moth. We don't. Moth fixes its attention 100% on the light and sometimes get burnt also inside the fire. But we are not that. We have intelligence. We know we shouldn't do that. We must develop the next level of attachment. And now we should get really attached to, first and foremost, Dasya Ras. In association of devotees, the most important thing you learn is Dasya Ras. Because by serving others, you develop that wonderful relationship with God. And then you have really entered into the realm of going back home, back to Godhead. Otherwise, you are on the periphery, and from the periphery, you can always fall off. It's a very, very long story. My time is up. But maybe if I had more time, we would have discussed this wonderful slok from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Leela 4:17:27, which really spells out that how one should approach Krishna to attain Krishna. How one should approach Krishna to attain Krishna. And Krishna himself, that is Lord Krishna himself, comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he's teaching how to attain me. Because nobody else could teach us. Krishna realized, after all, he is very, very intelligent. Krishna is, after all, Supreme Personality of Godhead. He realized that none of them is attaining me. I told them what to do, but they don't know how to do it. So I have to do it myself and show them how to do it. Just like a mother tells a daughter that this is how you make roti. But she will not make the proper roti. The mother will herself make the roti. The daughter is standing there. Next time the daughter is trying to make the roti, she will make some map of India. And then slowly, slowly it will become a proper roti or a chapati. So that way Lord Krishna himself became Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and taught us the actual step by step. And this has come to us fortunately by the mercy of Bhakti Vinod Thakur, to whom we are eternally grateful. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? This I have just given you a basic outline, very, very small thing. If you really want to get into it, you have to buy the book. It's called Dasa Mula Tattva, the 10 esoteric truths of the Vedas. I think I have floored everybody with all sorts of things. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.